Welcome, everybody, and welcome to Talking Critic, home of the worm from hell. I am your host, Bob, Dr. No Means No Mackie, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of the critic. Who else is here with me today?
I'm Diana Goodman, and I'm going to be part of this podcast, even if it means eating a whole cheesecake and taking a nap.
You're brave, Diana. You're very brave. Who else?
I'm Michael Raparez, and my eggs don't ripen.
Wow, and who else?
Henry Gilbert, and I wish I hadn't used the word itch.
And today's episode is A Song for Margot.
You will not or be eaten by the worm from hell.
I'm a big worm from hell fan. This episode aired on March 26, 1995, and as always, Henry will tell us what movies were in theaters at this point in history.
Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book!
Oh boy, Bobby. Patrick Swayze plays Pecos Bill to Catherine O'Hara's Calamity Jane in Disney's Tall Tale.
That never happened.
Kathy Bates makes another Stephen King film in the less violent but more depressing Dolores Claiborne. And Damon Wayans becomes a drill instructor for children in Major Pain.
I have not seen any of these films.
My friend who went into the army loved Major Pain, and he said every military person he knew loved the film Major Pain because they said to say it made drill instructors seem very real. It was a good version of a drill instructor.
Was he shouting at children in that movie a lot? Was that
yes.
How it worked? It was military school?
So he was too intense for the Marines, so they drum him out of the Marines, and so then he gets into a military academy with kids. So basically, Damon Wayans doing a silly voice screams at like little white children. That is the main comedy of it. And my friend, by the way, who loved Major Pain, he signed up for the Army Reserves in 2000, thinking like, well, yeah, it's just going to be easy. It's like a weekend job.
Uh-oh.
Two tours of Iraq later, not so easy.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I got to say, I graduated from high school in the year 2000, and a lot of my fellow teens were like thinking of the Army as this big scam. Like, what an easy job. Join the Army. You get insurance. You get a nice paycheck. You get, benefits. It's going to be so great. There's never going to be another. Oh, shit. Oh, fuck.
Yep.
I can't get out. Help. That's kind of what happened to a lot of people I went to high school with. So.
And Dolores Claiborne's a really good movie. It has content warning, folks. It has some very dark stuff in it, but it's a really good. Kathy Bates as Dolores Claiborne is quite good.
So right off the bat in this episode, we get a parody of the then recent movie Star Trek Generations, finally taking those no good Generation Xers to task.
Yes.
Space, big deal.
All right, you two. Who wrote Beavis and Butthead Rule on the back of my skull?
Not us, man.
Hey, aren't you the dudes from the TV show? You know, that space thing?
Will you please try to stay in character?
When will people stop going to Star Trek movies? Maybe when they see this clip of William Shatner's musical number.
Raindrops keep falling on my head. My feet are too big for my bed.
So I had to include that because, you know, Rocket Man is in the news lately, and this is a parody of William Shatner's kind of spoken word performance of Rocket Man from the 1978 Saturn Awards. I feel like this is from, like, the Orson Welles Altay clips. This is definitely, like, Hollywood Insider sort of jokes. I don't think a lot of people had seen this footage. I know Family Guy maybe 5 years later would kind of recreate the whole thing with Stewie.
Yeah, but Rocket Man... Him singing Rocket Man was a joke. Like, he was doing it to be funny. He wasn't thinking he was singing well, right?
Like, it's like those are memes before the internet were memes where it was sort of insider, but every now and then, like, you knew someone who got, like, an eighth generation bootleg tape and you'd watch it and be like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yes, we should hear it, though.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour. 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high. There's a kite by then.
Oh my god, it's great. And the way he pensively smokes that cigarette, he smokes a cigarette poorly, and that all the smoke is sort of blowing back into his face and hair. It's great.
It is great.
He's kind of smoking like
smoking.
A joint, actually. He's like, all my fingers are on this thing.
But especially that pause before he says, hi.
Get it?
In terms of the parody itself, two things immediately come to mind. The first is that Patrick Stewart was probably actually the biggest fan of Beavis and Butthead.
That's
who would have been on that set.
Yeah.
And second, it right off the bat puts a very anti-Generation X note on this episode.
Oh yeah, I mean they made fun of Generation Xers in the episode where there was the focus group, and they were sort of deadbeats.
But for this Kurt Cobain focused episode, it's right out the bat, with the Gen X sucks stuff. There's a poster for Woodstock 2, which would really have been called Woodstock 94, not Woodstock 2. I'd go to Woodstock 94 any day before Woodstock 99. Something I want to say about the production of this episode, it was written by Joshua Stein and now Jennifer Ventimiglia, who they were the co-writers of this episode, and they also wrote Simpsons episodes Round Springfield and Simpson Tide under Gene and Reese.
Okay.
But most interesting of all is that at the time of production, the Jennifer's name was J.R. Ventimiglia, and that was pre-transition. So there has been a trans writer for The Simpsons, and that is Jennifer Ventimiglia.
I didn't know until you told me.
No, it was news to me as well, because when I went to the writers' names for all of them, like to check the wiki, and I was like, oh, J.R. Ventimiglia. Oh, and then it took me to a page for Jennifer. I was like, wait, is this the right page? But yeah, they actually, the two of them were trying to produce a show with Dan Savage about kind of autobiographical about a pair of comedy writers and one of them transitions and how the other one deals with it. And it would have been Transparent, but meets Larry David. But it sounded pretty interesting, but I don't believe that last news story was like from 2015.
Okay.
And so I believe it just wasn't produced. But
can they get Patrick Stewart on the tambourine though?
Also today, Keanu Reeves is a top action star. Well, meanwhile, Christian Slater went through some dark periods. Obviously, you have to be in desperate situations to be in an Uwe Boll movie.
Oh yeah. Mm.
But now he's the star of Mr. Robot, co-star. Mr. Robot. Rami is the star, really. But yeah. And so, yeah, I don't know. They're both in better stakes now than they were 23 years ago.
So Jay wants to have a nice meal, his 4:30 dinner, but fortunately his eggs have ripened. It becomes an alien parody. And then
whenever I look in my loser single guy fridge, I think eggs don't ripen, or just any Jay's sadness is shared by all single men, all pathetic single men.
It's not just, eggs don't ripen. And then aliens come out. They sort of like alien pterodactyl looking things. But he slams the door, and then like there's imprints of them. Like they're so strong, they can bust through the door.
Almost at birth, they can almost break through the door.
He's about to turn bad.
He's going to come home to an apartment full of aliens at this point. Yeah. So
I'm just screaming, "Eggs don't ripen!"
And we then go to Franklin and Eleanor's house, and Margo is being courted by Ed Koch, who I guess we later found out in real life was a preferred man, right? Yep. Is that what we talked about last time?
Yep. He
was a confirmed bachelor.
So we don't know, but we have.
He was the only single guy in the neighborhood.
But maybe don't try to date a high schooler, Ed Koch, when you're in your 60s.
Yeah. Walking through the bushes outside her window. How am I doing?
He's not doing so good.
It's more weird that he's hitting on a 17-year-old than if he was a closeted gay man.
I would call the police. But so we hear about the new neighbors moving in.
Oh, Jay, did you hear? We're getting new neighbors next door. Ted Forrester's going to prison in that SNL scandal.
Oh, prison. Those were the best 5 to 10 years of my life. I was a model prisoner. Model lingerie, mostly.
So he made the best of his prison experience.
This would fit in with the timeline of the joke of him pointing at the newspaper about the governor indicted. So I guess after being governor, he was arrested and went to jail for 7 years.
I wonder how many years he actually served, though.
Yeah. 5 to 10.
Yeah. I mean, I think he would know. I think the sentence was 5 to 10, but I think he got off with good behavior.
You would think his sentence would be commuted by his lieutenant governor who would get installed, but maybe he was just too hot to handle there.
Yeah. After a few months of modeling lingerie, that kind of sealed the deal. And then we meet Johnny Rath of the band Nuns in a Blender, and Shackelford apparently has a fascination with him in this Dr. Seussian parody.
Hi.
My name is Johnny Rath.
Johnny Rath?
The lead singer-songwriter of Nuns in a Blender, the most relevant band on the grunge rock scene today.
Shackelford, you listen to grunge rock?
Before I was your butler, I would buttle for the Beatles and the Turtles and the Eagles and the Kings of Heavy Metal.
You're a heavy metal eagle turtle beetle butler.
And I once dusted the lamp of John Cougar Mellencamp.
Would you like to work for me?
This was clearly meant to be.
I never knew you had this itch.
Live and learn, you wicked witch.
I wish I hadn't used the word itch.
You could have gotten bitch instead. So,
I feel like it was bitch in the first
run. You stupid bitch.
You stupid bitch. I feel like that would have been censored.
That would have been foxier, I think.
Yeah. They did such a nice job with the Seussian sort of animation. Like, if you look at everything.
Shackelford's hands are like clear Zeus hands.
Yeah, and the way his face and eye is drawn, too, just like really perfect.
He just becomes the Cat in the Hat for that bit. So Johnny Rath is played by Todd Luiso, and I just love him in this. Like, everybody else on the show sounds like a voice actor, and he sounds like a guy. It's just so much more natural, especially there's some real lines in here where it feels like they just said, just go for it, Todd. Just, go for it. And so Todd most famously played Dick in High Fidelity, which I have a little clip of here.
Well, the interesting thing about Green Day is that so much of their music is, in truth, directly influenced by, in my opinion, two bands.
The Clash.
Clash. But also by this band called the Stiff Little Fingers.
There you go. Yeah, so he's hitting on Darlene from Roseanne in that clip.
Yeah. But, which in real life, barking up the wrong tree with Sarah Gilbert there.
That's right. Yeah.
But that movie, High Fidelity, I rewatched some scenes from it after looking that up. I was like, when I was a video store snob, I loved that movie. I was like, yeah, I'm as smart and cool as these guys. And now when I watched it, I was like, now I'm in the camp of, you guys are insufferable assholes. Like, fuck
this
all
This is why
of
retail's
you.
Dead.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, so I was going to say, so did we catch the reference, Nuns in a Blender?
No.
Okay, because I'm older than all of you, so I remember this is a shitty schoolyard joke, that this was Dee Snider's first band before Twisted Sister.
Okay.
Oh, Twisted Sister, Nuns in a Blender.
I thought it was What's Black and White and Red All Over. Nuns in a Blender.
Oh, that too.
I thought maybe it was the old Monty Python sketch where the name Toad the Wet Sprocket came out of.
Oh, that's right.
Man, I'm learning so much here. I never knew. I thought Nuns in the Blender was just a non sequitur. That makes so much more sense.
I'm pretty sure that Todd Luiso, if that's how you say his name, Luiso was cast. He had a previous relationship with Gracie Films in that James L. Brooks produced the sitcom Phenom, and he played the older brother in that show.
He's a very character actory guy, definitely. He sounds like weird and quiet. He's so great in High Fidelity, like he's the soft boy of the group. Mm-hmm. And when he just says like how impressed he was when the lead character in the film is reordering his record collection by romantic history. He's like, wow, I never even think of reordering records like that.
We find out that Frankie and Ellie sleep in separate beds. And Eleanor is a real ice queen.
Yeah, I was like, wait, they do have sex sometimes, I thought. But
once the barbed wire is taken down, the dogs are tranquilized. I'm sure sex happens at some point.
I guess it has to be on Eleanor's terms. Though.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, she has a theory on this, as she explains later, that it takes years of flirting and teasing to bring a man to a proper boil.
Yes. I did love that line.
So steam will shoot out of Franklin's ears at some point.
Yeah, he's clearly bubbling as he walks past.
I'm surprised steam hasn't shot out of his ears on the show by this point yet.
And we get the second joke in a row of Doris being a bad influence on Penny. I think, and this is the one where she talks about her tuchus, maybe? I don't know.
No. That was last week.
Yeah. This is diaper rash.
Diaper rash,
You don't have diaper rash, honey.
Yes. Yeah, so in order to get Penny away from Doris, Alice starts exploring different preschool options, and I have a clip of both of the schools she explores.
I'm interested in your preschool for my daughter Penny.
We have room for your daughter.
Wonderful, but I'd like a tour first.
A tour? Well, yes, of course.
This is child labor.
Well, yes.
Have we made enough Simpsons merchandise yet?
Never!
So Nightmare on Elm Street preschool is
next.
Maybe
this one will be better.
Come on in. It's nap time.
I don't want a nap.
You will nap or be eaten by the worm from hell.
I don't like this school.
Which part didn't you like? It's the worm from hell, isn't it? He's not so bad once you get to know him.
Let's go, honey.
Poor worm from hell. That's sort of a so slightly sad. British Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
Like, he sounds just like, is it Lur from Omicron Set?
Yeah. That is Maurice LaMarche doing his Lur voice.
It is the Lur voice. Yeah. But I think in both those cases, like, they could have thought of better sign gags than Oliver Twist School at Nightmare on Elm Street School.
At least the reveal is pretty funny for the Elm Street School, where a Nightmare on is covered up by a tree branch.
Yeah, but Oliver Twist School, like, at least call it Dickensian School. You don't have to make it exactly that. I love how the guy goes like, well, yes.
Alice called the police or something.
That's true. So they're making Simpsons merchandise. That feels like Al Jean and Mike Reese are not fans of Matt Groening at all when they're making this show, because they were pointedly very pissed off at Matt Groening for not wanting his name on the Critic crossover episode. So I feel like saying that child labor makes Simpsons merchandise, which probably is true for some Simpsons merchandise out there. With the volume of Simpsons merchandise made throughout the world, some of it had to have been made by child labor.
Yeah, and I mean, even when they worked on the show, there were lots of jokes about how much Fox was profiting from merchandise, and they really weren't.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
That was a constant thing that they would hammer home.
And they got to reuse the worm from hell just from the last episode.
That's right.
The sandworm mirage. By the way, we missed the electric Kool-Aid acid test reference.
All right. Leary visited Jay's preschool class.
Yes, it brought by Kool-Aid laced with LSD, which is how Tom Wolfe and the rest of the merry band of pranksters got high with Timothy Leary in the electric Kool-Aid acid test, which, you know, I didn't love that book. It's all right.
Now we have established the Rainbow's End preschool, and it's too good for even Prince Charles's kids. And I have to say, I am as old as his kids. They are way too old for preschool in 1995. That's probably why they got kicked out.
That's true. Also, 22 years later, Charles is still not king. I know that apparently Elizabeth, like, she's not doing the Remembrance Day public appearance this time. She's not laying down the whatever you do on Remembrance Day.
The wreath thing.
Yeah, she's not laying down the wreath. She's going to wave from a window, but
she's 90-something, man. Yeah, she's been queen for, like, million trillion years since like 52.
Don't make her stand anymore.
Poor king. Like, meanwhile, Charles is going to get to be king for like 2 years or something.
But it's such a great joke about who died and made you king. Nobody.
I'm surprised they didn't make him uglier, though. He's not that ugly in this drawing. You know?
Also, Prince Charles is getting thrown out on his ass, but not his kids.
That's right. They're keeping them for ransom. Margot is bonding with Johnny Rath, and Eleanor is pissed off.
First he stole my butler, now he's stealing my daughter.
Well, he won't steal the silverware. I've glued that to the ceiling.
Dad, I understand the silverware, but why the dog?
You understand the silverware? Cuckoo!
I wonder if he used crazy glue. It's crazy.
But that dog isn't Tiny. It's a different dog.
Yeah, Tiny is dead. Tiny was sold to Vlada and made into some sort of dish, I think.
Well,
maybe in the kebab store we've seen in the next episode. That's Tiny.
Oh, boy, that joke. Yeah. I like to think that dog died on the ceiling, too. It just starved to death.
Or just, like, had its skin torn off.
Yeah. Well, maybe he shoots the badger blaster food at the dog
that's
on the
true.
Ceiling.
Yeah. Franklin has many inventions that we don't see.
He's a hard worker.
I'm just also thinking of the logistics of getting the dog up there and upside down.
It's a very high ceiling, too. Yeah. It's a vaulted ceiling.
The dog seems pretty happy about it.
Yeah.
Franklin, by this point, he isn't just a man who drinks a lot and isn't very smart. He has magical powers. he can do anything.
So great. So the Sherman family hates publicity. In fact, Don King and the Pope have been lost in their hedge maze for weeks, I think. We just see their heads bobbing
just
back and forth.
Just because they didn't want to tell anyone.
Yeah.
Well,
they're risking two notable figures dying in their backyard to avoid publicity.
It works as a joke that you don't have to animate mouth movements on, which is the perfect critic joke, because then they can write the last-minute joke and no one will even notice.
Yep. In fact, that's how they end this episode.
It's a weak ending. I'm getting ahead of ourselves. Also, right after Simpsons did Rock Bottom, the critic simply does
just hard copy.
Just hard copy.
And one of like three Howard Stern jokes in a row, this one is pointing out Robin Quivers just laughs at everything and it doesn't matter what he's saying, which is kind of true if you listen to Howard Stern.
Yeah,
and,
but he also asks an underage girl to get naked.
That is true, which is also very much like Howard Stern.
Yeah. That OJ joke, too, seemed pretty lame, but it was like they didn't know what joke you could do with OJ. Like, when the trial was still ongoing, what joke can you plan ahead for animation?
You could put a jug of orange juice on the stand and say, it's refusing to talk.
I imagine this was written like maybe 2 months after the highway chase happened. So they wouldn't even know, like, did he kill himself in jail? I hope not.
And it's easy to remove if they need to. Remember that story they had about how they were working on The Critic and that the chase was going to go by them and they wanted to go out there with a sign that said, watch The Critic on ABC.
That should have worked.
And I also like that they have a different file photo joke for Jay of him with his foot in a toilet. And so it's not just him as the world's fattest man.
But not only his foot in a toilet, but with something you don't really see so often in the age of digital photography, which is the bright white eyes with red pupils that you get from flashes.
I think in the file photo,
man, you don't know about it.
In the file photo of Homer taking a giant bite out of the cake, I think we get the red eye flash on that too.
Yeah, that's true.
So up next, we meet Mrs. Doubt Franklin.
Now I have to interview replacements for the butler.
Hello, I'm Mrs. Doubt Franklin. Watch me lose my false teeth and set my bosoms on fire.
Oh, Franklin, you're not fooling anybody.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. I just did this because I wanted to see the children.
You can see them any time.
Well, who wants to do that?
They're not fans of Mrs. Doubtfire, and they kind of point out something the movie really doesn't address. It's like, you would recognize your husband in makeup and like in a fat suit too. It's not like you would immediately be like, this is a different person.
No matter how many wrinkles Harvey Fierstein will add to your face, it's still like, no, you have the face of Robin Williams. Like,
this person gave me three children. I should recognize their mannerisms in some way.
Garrett Graham nails the voice, though.
That's really good.
Yeah.
Mrs. Doubt Franklin.
Mrs. Doubt Franklin.
He's one of the best. He might be behind Charles Napier. He's my favorite voice on the show, I think. He's so good. Then we get a very dated Michael Jackson joke that he wants to join the daycare. I have to say, the daycare B plot really gets lost in this episode.
It really does. And it's like Duke will either present a problem or solve a problem instantly. That's sort of his role on the show. And that kind of happens with this plot line.
But first, Penny gets turned down for the very exclusive school that won't even take in Michael Jackson. and then we get a joke about the Tom Snyder Late Late Show, which I barely watched. I just knew it was bad thanks to Joe. Like this of like, no, this is an old man host a more out of touch older guy hosting a show after David Letterman.
Like, and he would be like sort of like in the way that Larry King would do it. It was even worse with Tom Snyder in that he would always like talk to people that we didn't see. Have conversations with people behind the cameras and like the stage producer and things like that before the guests would come on. So he's just like talking to people about where to get bagels and things like that while the audience is watching him inexplicably. I don't know. He's dead now, right? I think so.
Maybe.
If not, this podcast will kill him. That's our curse that we offer.
But also, did you know that Hydrox are older than Oreos?
Yes.
I always think of this joke whenever I think of Hydrox cookies. I'm like, well, I prefer Hydrox, the cookie duster.
Well, are you like me in that this was the first time you ever heard of Hydrox?
I didn't have Hydrox in my neighborhood. I never saw them when I went grocery shopping with Mother.
with mother dear.
And I also like that he's a rude guest to Tom Snyder, but seems about as rude as like Kurt Cobain, or it actually more reminded me of like Johnny Rotten and the Sex Pistols on things like, what do you care, man?
Tom Snyder's not fazed by it. He's like, well, what are you, like 100? And he's like, yeah, something like that.
He died in 2007 at the age of 71.
Oh, really?
And he died in San Francisco.
Yay. I'm pretty sure
Dan Aykroyd did a pretty good impression of him, right?
He was so good at it, yeah. Oh, died from complications of leukemia.
Well, I forgive his boringness. He was a sweet man.
But, I mean, those jokes about Tom Snyder were way funnier than Snoop Doggy Dog. Oh, wait, no, that was Snoopy the dog at the ice fall. He's like, yes, you're the 8 billionth person to make a Snoop Dog, Snoopy the dog joke.
That name is silly.
It's also like, it sounds so bad when you hear it in the 90s when he actually went by Snoop Doggy Dog, that it's like that's like an out of touch old person way to refer to Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, it's really bad. I do like the Fox logo joke though.
He salutes
him saluting the logo.
Yes. So up next, Jay meets Johnny, investigating him, seeing what he has in store for Margot.
Hello, I'm Margot's brother, Jay Sherman.
Yeah.
I'm worried about Margot. She's only a kid, and I'm afraid you see her as just another conquest.
Look, I really like Margot. You know, she's cynical and funny. She's just like you, if you were a girl.
Johnny Angel, how I love him, and I hope one day that he loves me. Va, 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 vo.
I just there, man. I'd never do anything to hurt Margot.
You know, my gut's telling me we're going to be friends. There's a pumpkin pie cooling on his windowsill. You make nice, and the pie is mine.
I love how off track Jay's fantasy gets. He's like, he's imagining himself as a woman singing a song. He's like, yes, I would be an attractive woman.
I would be a 50s cheerleader singing a bidoo-wop song.
Also, tell us again how you're not gay, man.
Yes.
Well, meanwhile, his stomach in this has more of the voice of like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon character with even the same plot, the plan as Yogi Bear would have.
Yeah. But we do get a nice shot of, you know, Jay reflected in Johnny's sunglasses as he walks up, which is very graduate-esque.
Oh, you're right. That's true.
And the Ski Bosnian shirt, it feels like such a specific reference.
Is it Surf Vietnam?
Oh, that was it. Yeah, Surf Vietnam. I remember seeing cool rocker dudes like Kurt Cobain and Eddie Vedder wearing shirts like that. That you can actually like – I searched for a Kurt Cobain t-shirt and you can like buy recreations of pretty much every famous t-shirt he was photographed in. And including the Daniel Johnson one, which he's wearing in his appearance in Guitar Hero, which Courtney Love sued over.
Oh, right. So up next we get a parody of a medical condition that is really not referenced after this year, the DTs, which is the withdrawal symptoms from alcohol. You start seeing like bugs and you get really itchy and you like – it's kind of like hallucinations or whatever. I think they have a better term for it than the DTs.
They do. I know this from reading the alt-weekly newspaper strip Mackey's. Oh, no. Hello. It is the delirium tremens.
That's right. So, yes, here is DT, the drunken terrestrial.
I love you. I really, really, really love you. I don't know when I ate that.
DT, I don't think we should do this right now.
I fly better when I've had a few. Ow.
So that was DT, the drunken terrestrial.
You are blowing my mind with this. I never got that DT was a joke about the DTs.
Yeah, like,
I never got that.
There's a great mention exchange in Mystery Science Theater where instead of the smoking jacket, it's the drinking jacket. It's a jacket covered with like plastic bugs. Frank is like freaking out with it. Yeah, so if you need to know old-timey names for alcohol withdrawal, that's one of the things you should know.
Also, DT eating the cat, that feels more like an Alf reference.
Alf, yes.
DT does not eat any cats.
And Blow Beer sponsored the movie, I guess. And we get a nice joke about how Sean Young was obsessed with playing Catwoman, which would also show up in an episode of Tiny Toon Adventures of her stalking Tim Burton.
So the joke was that Sean Young was a huge star in the 80s. She appeared in tons of stuff, including Blade Runner and Dune. And that she is a great actress. I still think she's great. But in the early 90s, we got a reputation as being difficult. She was cast less in things. And the thing with her and Tim Burton was she says Tim Burton promised she would be Catwoman, and then they cast Michelle Pfeiffer in the role, and she even like showed up in a cat. Well, the story was she showed up in a Catwoman costume, demanding she be Catwoman,
a homemade one.
And then she appeared like she was even was it Donahue? She was on or Sally Jesse?
Joan Rivers show.
Okay, the Joan Rivers show. She showed up, and he was like, "Come on, Tim Burton, I'm supposed to be Catwoman." I was like, "Well, you're really not going to be Catwoman in doing this. Like, this doesn't make you look less problematic.
Yeah. Catch more bats with honey."
I think that was parodied years later on Conan O'Brien, where they had Rob Schneider come in like a Superman costume.
Oh, I think you're right.
And be like, "Oh yeah, I'm going to be Superman." Like, no, they've already announced that it's Nicolas Cage.
And
this was when they were doing that Nicolas Cage Superman. And then like he's like, "Well, now I feel silly having." And then like he's in like a flight harness too, and he's like sort of flying around looking bored. Like, well, there's no point now.
Though this joke takes a darker turn when you find out that Sean Young a few years ago checked herself into rehab for alcohol issues. So though she's doing better now, slight spoilers, she does have things to do these days and does appear in Blade Runner 2049.
Well, her
in
old
way.
In the same way that Carrie Fisher appeared in Rogue One.
Sean Young was hired. It was not just archival footage. New stuff was done with Sean Young.
She's not a robot?
Yeah. She's in the credits.
Well, she is a robot.
Right.
She's got to be in the credits either way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a recovering alcoholic, maybe not the best person to hire to be a dancing beer bottle. But I do love the idea that if someone pisses her off, she breaks the neck off of her herself and then tries to stab them.
And that she remains broken the rest of the episode. When she returns, they did not fix the beer bottle. I mean, it's something in the Gene and Reese episodes, there's multiple they love a broken beer bottle. There were many, Marge stabs Ned many times with a broken bottle. A broken beer bottle is a favorite of them.
Yeah, I think even Alice makes a comment about not wanting Penny around that broken bottle.
Yes, yeah. But then that's where we get in Jay saying he couldn't do anything for Alice and saying like that he'd eat a cheesecake and take a nap and get the classic, it couldn't hide. Yeah. They love that
like,
line.
I can't believe it didn't work out. I ate a cheesecake. I took a nap.
What more?
I tried nothing and I'm all out of ideas. And there's a cute bit. There wasn't anything worth capturing in which Jay goes to a Nuns in a Blender concert. And
why would Jay not know that's a speaker? Like, joke does work. Is that a speaker? Like, it's a giant speaker. Yes. It's obviously a speaker.
You've seen a speaker before, and he's pulled up on stage with a crane, much like he was rescued from prison in the last episode.
But he's so stupid. Like, that is a Homer joke. Like, Jay's not supposed to be so dumb to not know what a giant speaker looks like.
Oh, yeah. But there is one joke I think that's worth capturing in there.
Meatloaf?
No. Are you ready to rock? Not yet. Brad's tying his shoe.
That was cute. I forgot about that.
Okay.
One.
I do like Johnny Rath's dissonant scream, like, ah, ooh, ah, ooh. Though he's not, he plays a guitar later, but here he's just the lead singer. He's not, he doesn't play an instrument in the band.
That's true,
which
yeah.
Back then, like, the lead singer in a grunge band usually was expected to be play the lead guitarist as well.
I noticed that with, like, Green Day as they moved into the American Idiot period. Billy Joe Armstrong stopped playing a guitar and was like, you're going to be really pretty and in front of a microphone now.
This guitar blocks your prettiness.
Yeah.
Can I just say, as someone who has tried to sing while playing an instrument in front of a crowd, it is really hard to do both at the same time. You have to practice.
Yeah, I would. I have tons of respect for people who do that. Like, yeah. Then he gets a Margo tattoo, which used to be Maggot. And so this is a reference actually to Johnny Depp because he had Winona Forever as a tattoo when he was dating Winona Ryder in the early 90s, which he then turned into Wino Forever.
That explains his behavior.
Yes. Well, there's actually a much crueler joke about him and changing tattoos that he had a tattoo on his knuckles of Slim, which was his nickname for Amber Heard, his then wife. It now says Scum.
Ooh.
Like, which, you know.
So, sort of bad he got it on his knuckles.
Yeah.
Sorry, guy. I don't mean to bring it down. But so this is a reference to the more innocent Wino Forever tattoo on him, which I have to say, like, this Johnny getting a tattoo of Margot before they even do the Dirty Dingo, like, that's a little, like, wait and see if you guys are compatible sexually first getting the tattoo.
In fact, Margot asks Eleanor about the Dirty Dingo.
Mom, I need some advice about sex.
I don't think you're ready yet. Women today are always rushing into things. It takes years of flirting and teasing to bring a man to a proper boil.
It's Franklin walking by, rattling and
the way
bubbling.
He has to have that hat on, the hat he never wears, so it's shaking with it. It's such a funny visual.
It's great animation.
Wait, can we go back a second? Because,
sure.
I mean, when he shows her the Margot tattoo and says, you know, I used to say Maggot, but I'll never see her again. That's a great joke, first of all, that Maggie was a woman. But they're in a limo, and Michael was wondering, I didn't go back to look, is it the same limo driver from when she went to the coming out? The Debbie Tom?
The guy looks a little older than
the one
who's...
It might also be the same guy who slams Alice's eviction notice on her door.
Maybe. I don't know right here, but
he looks
be.
Sort of like Jeremy. For a second, I was like, wait, is that Jeremy? No.
Where is Jeremy? He's still missing.
Jeremy's missing. He's off filming, I don't know.
I mean, he can't always be filming movies in New York, like, so why would he be
exactly.
in New York?
He's doing Keg Party at Hanging Rock 2.
Crocodile Gandhi 4. Working on his Bob Hope impression, maybe.
So I do think it's kind of modern for the time that Margot is I believe she's 17. If she's had her debutante.
I think she said she's almost 17.
Okay. Well, boy, then it is.
He is sort of dating an underage girl in this episode.
But it seems to be she comes to her own decision to have sex. Though I guess her going over to Johnny's, she could have – we'll never know what she would have done. But she could have been coming over to say, like, I'm not ready for this yet. Let's wait a couple years. Or she could have been saying, you know what? Let's do it. I want you to be my first time.
I like that she advocates for herself in a position where she's under a lot of pressure. You know, they're in the back of the limo making out. And she's the one to say, like, hey, okay, no, I want to slow down. Like, yeah, good. Sisterhood. Mm-hmm. You don't need the flirting and teasing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Guys are already at a boil, man. You don't,
it's hard
you
to
don't
turn them down from
all
a boil.
You
got
to do is snap your fingers, honey. Just,
although I will
here,
say.
Here, watch. I got my husband, a gay dude, and someone who's already affiliated.
Affiliated?
Ta-da! Women have superpowers.
It's true. We all got boners.
They'll make me stand up. All this equipment will come flying off the table. All right, I'm done with that.
Stay tuned to Fox, where we can say boobies. Watch my new show, The Critic, from the producers of The Simpsons. Only this time, they're sober. Ugh.
The Critic, coming soon.
But I just want to remark on, like, what we know about Eleanor, like, she is one of the most brittle, domineering people imaginable. And the fact that Margot is comfortable going to her and even mentioning the word sex, it's like they must have a really close relationship.
They must.
That's true, yeah.
Though
also, Eleanor lost her virginity in, like,
a Dave Brubeck concert.
In a parking lot of a Dave Brubeck concert.
She's fallen down several wells, like, while drunk.
I still can't talk to my parents about sex, and we've been married for how long? 9 years?
Yeah. No, I'd never talk about it either. And
I would have guessed that she would go to Jay. Mm-hmm. Jay, but he's a guy. I think she just wants to talk to a girl.
Yeah. And there are no other women in the show but Alice.
This could have been a good scene for her and Alice. They haven't really shared one. Then we get, you know, now knowing the history of the writers, having this, like, lightly transphobic joke of Jay going out on a date with who he thinks is Cher, but is clearly a man dressed as Cher.
That's just mean
it's Cher.
He can't believe that he's having dinner with Cher and that he met her in a bus station in Newark and she has a full mustache.
Another New Jersey joke.
And brown hair clearly visible underneath the black wig.
Jay needs glasses or something.
I think Jay wanted to believe.
Like, that could be like an edgy Mr. Magoo joke.
Though I got to give it to I do feel really bad for Margot. I feel like they should have made Johnny more of a bad guy who just would have.
Yeah.
I think he should have been unrepentant of just like, yes, I'm a famous rock star and I feel I deserve sex. If you weren't going to give it to me, I'll get sex.
Yeah. So there's something about just the dead-eyed bimbo that answers the door. She never speaks. She's always not a person. This dumb look on her face. And that makes Margot go home and have a Fatal Attraction reference.
Is that what that was?
Because it's so great.
Sitting on the floor, turning the lamp on and off, Fatal Attraction reference.
Wow. I didn't know that. Now I kind of don't like it because I thought, I was like, wow, that's a very poignant way to show someone's heart is broken. They're just kind of in a daze, turning the light on and off. And now that it's like, no, Margot's insane and she's going to boil Johnny's rabbit. I don't know how much I like that now.
Or it was a poignant way to show that in another movie.
Yes.
So wait,
a different character.
So Sean Young's in that movie too, right?
No.
Am I getting confused with Basic Instinct or different?
Thinking of Glenn Close, right?
Yeah. All right.
Speaking of bunnies, Franklin is dressed as the Energizer Bunny, like going by the door as Eleanor is giving advice to Marco.
There should have been a third Franklin doorway joke. The two were great. And then also this will lead to him being hunted by hunters who are like, you're on a rich man's property you're trying to kill a rich guy on his property. This is really crazy.
It could be Teamsters getting revenge for him burying Jimmy Hoffa in his backyard.
You know what? I would not be at all surprised if he hired them and this was like some sort of complicated sex thing.
That's true. So, I mean.
And then we finally get another movie parody.
Thank God they're finally taking down PC culture on The Critic. And up next we have the PC James Bond. This is a fairly long parody, but I think it's all worth it.
Well, darling, thanks to my efforts, Blofeld's army will now admit homosexuals, the blind, and midgets.
Die, Bond! Die!
Mr. Bond is next door.
Oh, silly me.
James, please, you know how I hate secondhand smoke.
Maybe I could light your fire.
Well, before we begin, I need a list of all the women you've been with for the last 20 years.
Let's see. There's Pussy Galore, Holly Goodhead, Plenty O'Toole, and of course Octopussy.
Maybe we should just cuddle.
Cuddle my ass?
That's sexual harassment, and I don't have to take it.
They just look sad.
James Bond will return in Dr. No Means No.
Seemingly, Jay's program showed the end of this movie.
Yeah, that's very strange. That's
good. But it's such a good drawing of Pierce Brosnan. It really, yeah. And he just picked up being Bond.
GoldenEye would come out that summer, so they knew Pierce was James Bond, so they were future-proofing it, but they couldn't base it on a performance they hadn't seen yet. But really, his Remington Steele is pretty close to his James Bond.
And James Bond had stopped smoking by that point.
Yeah, Dalton wasn't smoking, right?
I think it might just be Connery.
They drew Pierce's really nice eyelashes, but the line that sexual harassment, I don't have to take it, is from one of the most famous PSAs about sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. Let's hear it. It's not very long.
You know, you're doing a great job, but you're not using all your assets. With a body like that, you can go places.
Sexual harassment makes you feel like less of a person. For help and hotline numbers, ask for the Stop Sexual Harassment booklet at your public library.
Be a little more sexy. Hey, we're talking about your job here.
No, we're talking about sexual harassment here, and I don't have to take it.
Sexual harassment violates you, and it violates the law.
There you have it.
As I watch that commercial now as a grown-up, I think the look that the guy makes at the end is like, well, time to make up an excuse to fire you. I'll say you don't fit with our work culture.
Yes, a bad fit.
Yeah, you're a bad fit. It just doesn't work. Like, yeah.
We are in the wake of Weinstein Gates.
Yeah,
it's less of a gate, more of an open shower with a man masturbating inside. I'm sorry.
Also, I'm disappointed that while that was a blind little person in that shot.
Who's also gay.
We don't know if he was gay.
That's true.
We're assuming he's gay.
I mean, he was wearing an ascot, so maybe.
Look at his shoes, Michael. Look at his shoes.
I don't know.
Hey, gays can be whatever you want, all right? They don't need to, they don't have to fill a stereotype. We needed the lisp there. And then Duke breaks the law by having an ad for cigarettes on his channel.
Yeah, let's hear it. The Flemme Fatale cigarettes. Very,
good
very
name.
Cute.
I like that name.
Smoke in the bathroom, smoke after school. Don't listen to your parents, cause smoking's really cool.
Hey, that was me back in 1954. Smoke in the bathroom, smoke after school.
Really? What happened to your career?
I got knocked up by the Fruit of the Loom banana.
So Doris has a lot of illegitimate children.
It could be the same one.
Yeah, there's no proof the Fruit of the Loom banana isn't the father of the kid she thinks was Jay.
I thought that was JFK.
It was JFK or some fat guy who complained about movies all the time, which could be she didn't not say he was the Fruit of the Loom banana.
That's true.
You know?
Seems like someone with Jay's body type might be more of a grape. I don't know.
Yeah, no, he'd absolutely be the grape. He would not be the banana. But then in like classic critic stuff, they're like, we have a B plot we haven't fixed. Duke shows up and just fixes it. Let's speed this up. Like,
he uses his god powers to fix it. Let's hear it.
Duke fucking rules, so he does. I'm fine with this.
I'm Duke Phillips, and I want you to put this little girl in your school. Pronto.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Leghorn, but we don't have it.
You know what he's saying, Duke? He's saying that you can't get the daughter of the assistant to one of your most expendable employees into this preschool.
Is that a compliment or an insult?
An insult.
I've never been so insulted in my life.
So what are you going to do? Build your own preschool? Your own preschool. I'd like to see that.
And he does. It's Duke Phillips Preschool built on a dare, is the slogan.
So much. Just the, oh, God, that he built it, that he spent millions on a dare to make a preschool just for Penny. Like, he spent more money on Penny than he's probably spent on Jay ever.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
just on a dare.
We already know that the hard part is teaching the bunnies how to hug.
Yeah, let's hear about all the staff members at this new preschool.
This is my line of the show, I think. This
hardest part was teaching the bunnies to hug.
Thank you for the wonderful school, Uncle Duke.
Oh, you're welcome, honey. Now, I'd like you to meet your English teacher, Prince Charles, your dance instructor, Sean Young, and your headmaster, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist, Mr. Jimmy Breslin.
Here's your headline. Bunnies bite Breslin. Breslin bleeds badly.
Is your line of the show the muffin shooter? Because I don't have that.
That is my line of the show. Okay. We could cut it in right here.
I'll do it right now.
Don't take it so hard, buddy. Have some soft serve ice cream.
Could this possibly be any more disgusting?
You should see the muffin shooter.
Cool, let's give it line of the show. I love the disgusting sound of the ice cream coming out of his nose.
Yes, yeah. Well, and that though it's weird that a food monster like Jay is disgusted by it. It's like you, in the next episode, you'll eat a dead fish in front of everybody. Like, yeah, what do you care if like, ice cream comes out of a nose?
Or you'll eat a muffin out of a statue of your boss's asshole, I guess.
Oh, he absolutely will.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, we know that all Duke is life. And so I imagine pretty much everything in this school is shaped like Duke. I mean, it's,
totally.
It's not just the, you know, the soft ice cream dispenser and the muffin shooter. You know, I'm imagining like the urinals,
the water fountain,
yeah. The light fixtures.
I all that line would have worked if it should have been Alice being grossed out by the ice cream. She's like, ugh,
yeah.
It would have been funnier. But this is a further softening of Duke, who pretty much cared about no one and nothing, and now he has had his heart melted by a little girl in the case of Penny.
But really, Jay had to bring up that his pride was at stake.
Yeah. I guess that's
his pride.
Yeah, pride.
He's never been so insulted in all his life.
His pride?
So Jay has a plan to get rid of Johnny, and it involves his extremely Jewish parents.
This also moves very fast.
It does. These plots are coming to a screeching halt.
No! I can't be!
Where are Johnny's parents, Herb and Myra Rathberg?
We didn't shorten our name to impress the Gentiles.
Didn't you kill your mom?
No, that was just a song.
Johnny Rath, your middle name is bogus.
Oh, no, it's Shlomo.
Johnny Shlomo, get the bags.
The bags?
A house this big, you can't spare room for your parents. And maybe Aunt Yetta.
Yetta's coming? Oi! Widen the doors, strengthen the floors. Yetta's back in town. Look at me, I'm a regular Bruce Springsteen. Oi.
So I guess this doesn't get rid of Johnny, but it just preoccupies him and makes his life hell.
No, he abandons his house.
Yeah, oh, you're right. Yeah.
He
just lets his parents have it.
He's gifting his parents a mansion, which is pretty
just
nice.
Just like Elvis.
But yeah, which in real world, Kurt Cobain really hated his money. He'd never buy a mansion. He didn't want to. There's a story that he wanted to keep. He didn't want Courtney Love to buy a fancy new car. He wanted them to keep driving around in this old beat up car. And the people were like, well, but this is fake. Like, everybody knows you're crazy rich. It's actually more phony to drive around in this cheap car when we know you're richer than everybody.
Yeah, I like that it doesn't draw attention to yourself.
I guess
so. It's like if you're driving down the street and you see like a red Ferrari go by, you do tend to be like, who's that? Especially in LA, you're like, all right, anyone I know? Nope.
Also, when I hear Bruce Springsteen, it reminds me of Joe Piscopo's act of Frank Sinatra, where he's talking about he's going to be singing a song with this hip new cat, Bruce Springsteen.
Just, besides that, obviously Johnny's parents are super Jewish and super embarrassing. And just from the way they're dressed, they obviously came up from Florida, where they probably retired in Boca.
They got a nice
condo in La Boca Vista, you know, and it's got all the amenities. It's not the thing. You don't have to go anywhere. They go to the joke of no one looks cool in front of their parents, even Sean Connery.
Right, it's right.
Which is just, I love the idea that Sean Connery's parents both look exactly like Sean Connery.
And they want him to marry a fictional character.
They want him to settle down with that nice Miss Moneypenny.
When they have to be like 90. And,
yeah.
I like that Connery's mom is basically a Monty Python
woman. Yeah, she's
like,
totally a Pepper Pot.
Eat your haggis.
So hopefully Johnny is not lying to Margot through song like Pooh did to the Simpsons family.
Oh, no.
Margot, I blew it. Now I gotta chew it. I'm sorry.
Kind That sounds like The Replacements or something. That horse was remarkably calm with having like an amp strapped to it.
Yes, yeah.
For being kind of down on grunge through the whole episode, like that's actually a remarkably competent grunge song.
I was like, I can't tell if they're trying to make fun of grunge. It's weird. It's like, this is pretty catchy.
Todd goes all out and sings well in that song too. And I like that he... I think he is – I think they wanted to sweeten Johnny and not leave Margot just completely cynical and sad. And it lets him – I think he is meant to be honest. And the only negative thing is that he just – he gets too into it. He's like, I do mean this apology, but man, this guitar solo. I'm just feeling this guitar solo. Whatever I was singing before, it doesn't matter.
His catchphrase is sort of throughout the episode.
Yeah, because he just – abruptly stops the song for the guitar solo.
And then smashes himself in the head, which
twice.
Dave Grohl did that when they Nirvana was on one of the MTV Music Awards. He throws the guitar in not Dave Grohl, the other guy. No, the
Chris,
one nobody
Chris
remembers.
Chris Novoselic? Yeah.
Nobody remembers his name. I don't care.
He's like a politician now.
Nirvana Joe?
He threw the guitar in the air and smashed himself, and then he's just like concussed, stumbling around as he does it. So based on a real true story.
Nice. But I like that, Margo's not falling for this. It's not like, take me back, baby. And she's like, oh, well, maybe he'll be different. She's like, no, get bent.
I loved her sarcastic thing like, oh, all I wanted to say is get bent. Like, she is definitely not taking
She's
back.
A real firebrand, that Margo.
I wish this episode had ended on, if it had ended on hitting the head, guitar to the head and her laughing at him, that's a stronger ending than going back to the Pope and Don King. It leaves you with like a...
I think they probably just needed to fill some additional time.
Yeah, I'm sure it was that. They're like, nope, God, we need 8 more seconds.
I feel like if there was a third season of The Critic, they would have less of this issue that I also saw in season 4 of The Simpsons. It's like we have too many stories happening at once, and when they need to end, they need to end.
Yes.
And that kind of underserves both stories. Even though there are funny jokes, I feel like the episodes of The Critic, the few that are devoted to telling one story are a little better, I think.
Yeah, the B story, even back in the season 1, like, I remember the B story of Jay is the funniest, the wittiest man alive. It's like, you have no time for this. This really doesn't fit in with Marty learning to play the guitar.
Yeah, that's probably the worst mismatch, I think. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I enjoy this episode overall, though.
I like imagining the Pope fighting the Dalai Lama 15 rounds at Caesar's Palace.
That's a lot of rounds.
I mean, will it go to decision? I mean, the Dalai Lama's not going to throw a punch, but will the Pope? I don't know.
And the Pope's got to be like 80 at this point, John Paul.
Yeah,
John Paul, yeah. I really like this episode. I also did like the joke that the reveal that Penny is the only student at the school, too. Nobody else is going there.
She's being taught where to find a nice pretzel, which I want to know. I can't find a nice pretzel for my life.
No, that's going to make her like even weirder. Like, oh, no, she's around just 4 people all day in a giant empty school. But this is one of my favorite season 2 ones, I have to say. I think Todd Luiso, especially, his portrayal of Johnny Rath is really great, and I think the only negative thing is just the pacing is just slightly off, but mostly I think this is a really good episode.
Yeah, I think Margot has always been one of my top 3 characters, and I really liked seeing an episode that was about her again. We hadn't seen one of those in a while. I thought the animation quality on this one and like just the quality of the art was sort of uneven, especially compared to the episodes before and after it.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like I was happy when you guys brought this up. Like, oh, we're going to record this. It's like, oh, that's my favorite. So
still holds up.
Yeah, I think it's one of my favorites. It does feel like, they rush at the end. Both of these plots could have been like just their own episodes without a B plot. There's plenty to do. And don't change your name for the Gentiles. Be Johnny Rathstein.
Awesome. So thanks for listening, everybody, and giving us money. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts every Monday with an occasional bonus episode on Friday. It's a classic gaming podcast. Go to Retronauts.com or look for it in your podcast device as Retronauts. Everybody else, where can we find you? What do you do? Why are you here, Michael?
I do Vidigame Apocalypse, a weekly show about video games that goes up every Friday on the Laser Time Network. Look for it at Vidigameapocalypse.com or follow me on Twitter at WikiParas.
Diana.
I'm on the weekly show 30-20-10, where we look that particular week back 30 years ago, 20 years, 10 years ago, what movies were out, what was going on, pop culture. We've sent our love down the well, actually.
That's right.
Pretty recently, a little while ago. And I'm also on Twitter, mostly talking classic movies, at LeCineNerd.
I really like your tweets about newspapers and films and editing the headlines in newspapers and films. I really like that a lot.
Those are good.
Thank you.
And you can follow me on Twitter at HENERUYG. You'll see you updates about when new episodes go live on the Patreon. And obviously, I'd love to tell you guys to keep on supporting us. Keep listening to all these awesome Critic episodes. Tell your friends how cool these are and how signing up for the Simpsons Patreon is totally worth it. And, you know, why not review the Talking Simpsons on iTunes? We haven't mentioned that in a while, but that always helps.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with From Chunk to Honk. See you then. Ooh.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
But I have nowhere to go.